If American central bankers do take action today, where will we see it first? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. If the U.S. economy is the ocean, then the Federal Reserve might be the moon. You may not notice, but its monetary policy influences the economic tide. At around midday today, the Fed could raise rates for the fourth time this year. Marketplace's Ben Bradford examines where consumers will most notice the waves.
The Fed's benchmark interest rates could rise to 2.5%, up from about zero 3 years ago. That hike influences things like buying a new car.
Every movement of that needle does have an effect on autos and how much you're going to spend on interest over time.
Ivan Drury of auto research firm Edmunds says each 0.25% increase by the Fed translates to about an extra $250 on the average new car loan. Not just that, credit card payments, mortgages, student loans. If you're borrowing, the Fed's rates are baked into what you pay. Economist Gus Fauché at PNC Financial Services says these are not side effects of higher rates. They're the Fed's intention.
They don't want people, you know, buying too many cars, purchasing too much on their credit card. So they're just hoping to slow economic growth a little bit so that we don't see inflation accelerating too much, but the expansion does continue.
Hopefully keeping the economy on an even keel. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
The benchmark 10-year interest rate today is down below 2.82%. Raising interest rates is one tool in the Fed's monetary policy toolbox. To explore the options, we've got a feature at marketplace.org about the other wrenches, hammers, and screwdrivers at the Fed's disposal. Let's check markets. The FTSE in London is up 0.9%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each up in the 0.8% range. We're wrapping up our year-long coverage 10 years after the great financial crisis. Marketplace.org/divided decade for an array of teachable moments there. Today, where we live now. Marketplace's Amy Scott is on that beat. Hello, Amy.
Hey, David.
The great financial crisis snowballed from the subprime mortgage collapse. But here we are, about 10 years later. Where's the housing market now?
Well, home prices have recovered in most places, but not all. And that's a good thing if you're a homeowner, but it's not so great if you're trying to get into the market. Prices are up nationally about 50% since 2012, rising much faster than incomes, which puts homeownership out of reach, not just for people who lost their homes in that crisis, but newcomers to the market. And we have in some ways become a nation of renters. We worked with the APM Research Lab and found that in almost half of major cities now, 47%, renters now outnumber homeowners. That's up from 22% in 2006. So there are about 7 million more households renting today than a decade ago.
But we have to be careful about that statistic, the idea of pushing up the percentage of people who own their homes and don't rent. I mean, some argue that policymakers pushed homeownership too hard 10 years ago.
Yeah, but, you know, it's actually pretty complicated. Homeownership peaked in 2004, and that's before the real explosion of risky mortgage lending, you know, people taking out second mortgages and cash out refinancing and using their homes as piggy banks. The experts I talked to say homeownership itself didn't cause the crisis. It was risky lending. And now we've actually gone too far in the other direction. Credit standards have become so tight that the Urban Institute estimates more than 6 million people could have sustained home ownership over the past few years, but couldn't get mortgages.
All right, 10 years later, going into 2019, there are some signs the U.S. housing market is slowing again. What will that mean for the economy?
Well, it's not going to be calamity this time, or it shouldn't be. Housing makes up about 15% of GDP directly. So that's a sizable chunk, but not huge. And this economic expansion hasn't been fueled by housing. There was a construction boom. A lot of consumer spending was driven by housing wealth. So a decline shouldn't bring the whole economy down. But we're not seeing a decline yet. Sales have slowed. The growth in prices has slowed, but prices are still rising overall. And what we may see is a more healthy housing market.
All right. Marketplace's Amy Scott. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, did Facebook give out VIP backstage passes to the private data and messages of Facebook users? The New York Times is reporting that Facebook gave access to big partner companies. The report says Netflix and Spotify were allowed to read private Facebook messages. Microsoft reportedly got access to lists of friends. Facebook says it's all allowed by the fine print, but some experts believe this violates a formal deal Facebook has with the regulators. This has already prompted one Democratic senator to call for a new U.S. privacy law. Numbers alone don't tell the whole story. That's why Marketplace tells the stories behind the numbers, stories of real people, of businesses both big and small, and of the impact the economy has on each of us. Because you appreciate this kind of public service journalism, we're asking you to give something back. Donate today at marketplace.org, and your gift will go twice as far, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. BlackBerry, the company known for phones with the nubby keyboards, is still kicking. It's gotten into connecting everything wirelessly, security systems, software for self-driving cars. But the company still does make BlackBerries, with quarterly results due tomorrow. Here's Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino.
When someone pulls out a BlackBerry phone today, there's a predictable response.
Is that a BlackBerry?
Wow, you still have a BlackBerry?
BlackBerry holdouts Judy Kunish, who teaches nursing, and Andrew Light, who works at a nonprofit, say the signature keyboard is essential to responding to emails. The occasional mocking is worth it, says James Boston, a video producer and fellow user.
It's the equivalent of pulling out a pipe, wearing your mustache with curls on the ends. Even though it's old, it's a conversation piece.
Yale marketing professor and avid BlackBerry user Ravi Dar says despite a year of falling stocks, BlackBerry might still have staying power.
The brand has some negative baggage around, oh, it's old-fashioned, it's yesterday's news. But it also has some positive baggage around what they do well, they really do well.
Like data security. And that's an asset as the company continues to expand its business away from outdated devices towards software. Whatever the earnings news, fans like Dar will hold on to BlackBerry phones as long as they can. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
And would you like to know if the boss is betting that things go badly at the company? Years in the works, the Securities and Exchange Commission has approved a rule requiring companies to say if executives are allowed to hedge against, for instance, their stock collapsing. This is a long-delayed bit of the post-crisis financial reforms designed to tie compensation to performance and to discourage executives from profiting if their companies go down the tubes. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.